Yeah, okay, Boker Tov and Chanukah Sameach to our people in Israel in Alon Shvut, where our Rabbi Liebtag is and others in Israel, so I want to wish everybody, we should have a good occasions to celebrate Bayamim Ahem Bazman Hazeh. We should one day soon merit to light the actual menorah, the seven candle labra menorah. Okay, it's a pleasure to welcome. I don't need to welcome Rabbi Liebtag. He's here every week. He's here more often than I am on Sunday mornings. But to start a new little mini two-part series on My Chanukah. And as you know, of course, for today and then next week, and Bakasha, Rabbi Liebtag.
Okay. So the title, actually, my original point was to make Ma Chanukah. What is it? But Ma Chanukah is the Gemara's Lashon, so I'll try to tie them together. There's so many classes on Chanukah on the everywhere, especially on Torah and Moshe. So I'm hoping I'm not going to overlap. I'm going to try to stick with things which I think are relatively, I'm pretty sure, things I came up with. And I'll quote... So therefore, I'm pretty sure that won't overlap. And the things everyone else says, I'll try to tie into it. So let me go. There's two parts to it. One is I call whether, share my screen. Where's my title? Here we are. Okay. Technically, it's called Reexamining Chanukah. Is it rabbinic, prophetic, or universal holiday? So why would you call it a rabbinic holiday? That's obvious because it happened after the Tanakh was closed. It's definitely not biblical. It's definitely rabbinical, even though the rabbis don't seem to be so crazy about it. They almost had to accept it because the people, it was a very popular holiday, but a lot of people claim that the rabbis that there's no Masechet Chanukah. They toned down the whole things with the Maccabees, et cetera. And they put the whole focus on the menorah. Hopefully we'll get to that when we talk about how holiday developed rabbinically. Now, why would you think it's not a prophetic holiday? Because it's after the Tanakh is over. We're going to see primarily next week why it is a prophetic holiday. But to understand why it's a prophetic holiday, we have to start this week why it's a universal holiday. Because it can't be by chance that both Christmas and the Christian holiday and the ancient Roman holiday of Saturnalia, which we'll talk about today, and Hanukkah come out the same time of year. Now, at first thought, is when you take it the way it's popularly understood, it seems totally by chance that Hanukkah and Christmas are at the same time of year. Why? Because why is Hanukkah this time of year? Because the battle ended on the 24th of Kislev or 25th of Kislev. And, they quickly lit the menorah. And had the battle ended a week or two earlier, a month later, whatever it would have been, it would have ended then. But we'll see in Sefer Maccabim, they purposely picked the day to dedicate it. And the date was picked on purpose. And we'll see the sources back from the book of Haggai. But more so, the popular medrash that their Lord, their Mashiach, was born on Christmas is also a much later custom of theirs. And they have no idea when he was born. They assume in the spring, maybe the summer, in their sources. But basically, because it was a Roman holiday called Saturnalia that the early Christians couldn't get rid of, when Constantine took over the pagan Romans became Christian, they basically turned Saturnalia into a religious holiday to keep it, because they couldn't stop the celebration. So basically the Christian rabbis and the Jewish rabbis have the same problem. There's this popular holiday that they can't get rid of. So they have to give it religious meaning. Now, the first thing I want to do in today's share is explain why the winter solstice is exactly Hanukkah. I have a chiddush, I think, which I'll try to explain why. But first, just quickly, I'm going to jump to next week's topic, why the 24th of Kislev is why the date of Hanukkah is in the prophets. It's a famous pasuk in Haggai, which people have noticed before, but I want to give a more basic understanding why that date's so important. I have a cute little title here. Is it a prophetic holiday because the time period was pathetic? You see what I mean? That we'll focus on that next week. The time period of the original dedication of the Second Temple, things were totally pathetic. And the reason why Hanukkah is an important date was because things were so pathetic and they picked a date on purpose to give hope in times of darkness. And that's where we're going to go in that direction. And now I have to go back to see how that relates to the very earliest source about Hanukkah from the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, which I'm sure you've seen before. Now, just quickly, in chapter 2 in Haggai, on the 24th of the ninth month, which is 24th of Kislev, in the second year of Daryavesh, Haggai has a nevuah, We're not going to go. There's a question for the Kohanim. We'll talk about that next week, about whether Tumah spreads or whether Tara spreads. In order to make something holy, you need to take an action. Passively, Tumah, uncleanliness, spreads passively. Kedusha, becoming holy, needs an active, something active. And he's saying the people are too passive, you have to take action. And then what we see, he says, pay attention to this day before they start building the second temple, you know, and how bad the economy was. Again, we'll all do this next week. He says, pay attention, and pay attention to the pay attention. Remember Simun al-Bavchem? Pay attention to that. What's he say in the beginning? He says this over and over again. Pay attention to this day. And he says again, and there's a second one the same day on the 24th of Kislev, tells Rubel of another thing about a big political upheaval and a big military victory. And this would be the sources of many things in the book of Chashmonaim, which we'll get to later on. I want to focus first on the universal side. Just one last thing, because today is the 24th of Kislev. In America, it's still the 24th. Now we're going to the 25th. We actually celebrate Hanukkah on the 24th of Kislev, the first candle, don't we? Because if I take even the Midrash, that the battle ended and they lit the candles, so we're lighting, they lit the menorah from the evening to the morning. So if the battle was over, let's say, based on the famous Midrash, and they lit candles, and that's the first night of Hanukkah, then the battle ended on the 24th of Kislev, and we light candles on the 24th going to the 25th. So basically, the first day of Hanukkah is really the 24th, not the 25th, because we light the 24th in the evening, and in the Mishkan, they lit from the Erev Ad Boker. So even though the first technical day is the 25th, our celebration starts from the 24th in the afternoon. So therefore, the 24th and 25th can be considered pretty much the same day. Okay, now, that's just a quick little background that we're going to get to, introduction to, we'll focus on next week about the prophetic, I call it the prophet who stole Hanukkah. If you understand the joke, you know the movie fine, if not. The prophet who stole Hanukkah, you know the Grinch thing? So you see, there's a prophet who stole the date of Hanukkah way before Hanukkah. That's the cue title. Now, I spent all my days trying to think of cue titles. Now, so I want to begin with the basic idea of the winter solstice. First, there's a famous Gemara about the winter solstice from Avodah Zarah. Did Benny do this Gemara? I'm assuming you're familiar with it. I'll do it quickly. Oh, we're not. This is famous, and this proves that there's something religious. There's religious meaning to winter solstice. Don't be surprised that we have a holiday in the spring equinox, don't we? Passover, Chodesh Aviv. We have a holiday in the fall equinox, don't we? That's Sukkot, which are agricultural holidays, the beginning and end of the agricultural season, which is when the day and the night are the same time. That's equinox. So don't be surprised that we're going to find a holiday at the solstice. That shouldn't surprise us. Now, I have to explain to you in today's the first part of today's share is why is Hanukkah the solstice? Okay. Now, you can have the solstice on a solar calendar, December 21st, you know, when the day and night are equal. But at first glance, there's no way we can have a solstice on our calendar because it's lunar. But I want to show you how we do have. But let's begin with the Gemara Avodah Zarah. First of all, there's a Masechet, which is really strange, about idol worship. And the second statement of the Ten Commandments is forbidden to worship idols. So why would I have a Masechet dedicated to idol worship? Makes no sense. But the answer is simple. Because we don't want to encourage other people to worship idols. And there's the first Mishnah tells us that when there are holidays, when there are idol worshiper holidays, it's forbidden for Jews to make business deals with idol worshipers near their holidays, because they'll be so happy to land a deal, they're going to thank their God, small g. And we're going to encourage idol worship by making business deals with idol worshipers near their holidays. They'll say, oh, it's Bashert. No, our gods are with us on that day. So that's the first Mishnah in Masechet Avodah Zarah. And the second Mishnah says, so now to be a good Jew, to be a firm Jew, you need to know the idol worshippers' holidays. So then we have a whole list of holidays that you can't make business deals with non-Jews. We find ways around this law with no problem. But I'm pretty sure, right, Rabbi? I don't think anyone's makpid on this nowadays. People don't make...
I said, we're all non-Makbid. I alluded to that in my shir, actually, because we assume Christianity is not a Avodah Zarah. I mean, among other reasons.
Okay, yeah.
Tosfot, big bad Tosfot, the goyim aren't so frum, you know, they don't really mean it. They just go to church to like the Jew, just go to shul. I mean, it's an amazing Tosfot there. But yes, we all get around this halakha. But in the Middle Ages, the question is how. It was pretty serious. But I think today we just assume Christianity is not a Avodah Zarah.
So now, when we get in chapter, and Daf Chet, the next Mishnah talks about these are the holidays. And one is called Kalanda, one is called Saturna. Okay? So Omar of Hanan Bahama. I'll make this a little bit bigger so we can see it and move it to the right. There we go. Actually, we use the English and Hebrew right there. The thing. This guy's on top. We say as follows. Omar of Hanan Baraba. Kalanda, Chet Yamim Acharat Kufa. Kalanda is 8 days after the winter solstice. Kufa is the solstice or the equinox. You can use, there's four kufot in the year. But the kufa means, in this case, it means the what's called Kufa Tevet, the winter solstice. Saturn is 8 days before the winter solstice. Okay. Now, we have a wonderful midrash story. Tan Rabbanan. The rabbis taught. Lefi shra Adam HaRishon Yom Shemit Mait V'Holech. Adam HaRishon, according to our tradition, was created and hence born in Tishrei. Remember Hayom Harat Olam? And his father-in-law got him a really nice watch when they got married to Eve. He was looking at his time. And he noticed, you know, a month or two after he was created, he finished his chakras, it's time for mincha. The days are getting shorter and shorter. And he starts looking at his watch and he notices that the days are getting shorter and shorter. Yom Shemit Mait V'Holech. He figured it out and he knew Yiddish. Omar Oili. He said, woe is to me. Shema Bishvil Sesarachti Olam Chashuch Badi. Maybe the reason why the days are getting darker and darker, that's because I sinned. Remember, I blamed my mistake on my wife. God was so angry with me for blaming my wife for my own mistake. And he said, he banished me. And he said, you're going to die now because I ate from the tree. So Adam that didn't know what death was, but what did he notice? The days are getting darker and darker. If this continues, what will happen? There'll be no light. And we're back to before creation. Remember, the first thing God created was Or. Now there's no light. And maybe that's what God meant by death. Okay. So again, Bishvos Sarach Olam Chashuch Badi B'Chozeh L'Tovavo. God's creation is going backwards to where it started. And when God said you're going to die, that's what he meant. No light is death. Okay? He didn't take the situation. He had to do tshuva. Amad v'yashav chet yamin b'tanit u'b'tfilah. He davened for 8 days. Fasting and davening for 8 days straight. Every day looking at his watch. Kivan shrad tkuva teve. When he noticed, hey, the days are getting a little bit longer. What happens? B'ra yom shemarich fo lecheis. The days have started getting longer already. Amar minhago sholamu. You realize, I guess that's nature, right? Halach v'asa shmon yamim tovim. He made an 8-day holiday. Now, listen to the Lashon here, which is so similar to the Gemara about Hanukkah. Lashana hacheret, it's almost a copy-paste from the Gemara, the famous Gemara in Shabbat. The next year, asan le'ilu le'ilu yamim tovim. The next year, he made both the 8 days that he fasted, made a holiday, and the 8 days that he feasted, Kal v'chomer, made a holiday. Who kabam l'shem shemaim? Adam HaRishon made this winter solstice holiday, the 8 days before and 8 days after, l'shem shemaim, to thank God for nature. Okay, v'hem, his descendants, kabum l'shem avodas kochavim. But it became a pagan holiday. So that's the Gemara's beautiful midrashic interpretation of how this holiday began. Now, what happened, how it continued after the flood, Noach kept it going, Noach's sons, I'm not sure how it continued, but that's the beauty of midrash. I don't think Chazal meant to take this literally, but there's basically what Chazal is saying is that this time of year is don't be surprised that we find a pagan holiday worshiping a sun god. In fact, we'll see later on a website that the original Saturnalia was actually a sun god holiday. When the sun was born, in some custom they have or some tradition they have, that the sun god was born on this date. On the winter solstice. Okay. Now, the famous Gemara in Hanukkah everybody knows, but I just want to point out the parallels. Notice that there's 8 days of Hanukkah. And remember the Machloket Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel? So everyone knows the famous, the 25th of Kislev or the days of Hanukkah. We don't do Espedim, etc. When the Yevanim came to the Eichal, remember, there was no kosher oil. And the Chashmonaim found a little container of oil. Just one technicality, which I hope people would explain. The miracle was not in the menorah. The miracle was in the pach. That's crystal clear from the Talmudic text, meaning Vember Pach is Zachar, Menorah is Nekeva. So they found one pach, a pach achat shel shemen, and the mitzvah according to Chumash is you light the menorah from evening to morning. In normal days, what they would do, the Kohen would come in the morning. It's called Hatavat HaNerot. He'd come in the morning into the Kodesh. He'd clean up the menorah. If there were any candles still lit, he would extinguish them, took out the oil, put in a new wick, put in new oil, cleaned everything, put the Nerot back on top, had it all set up, did not light it. He came back in the evening after the Tamid Shabein Harbaim, after the afternoon Korban, and before the last Avodah he does in the Mikdash was lighting the menorah. That's called Hadlakat HaMenorah. So you would make Tiv Hatavat HaNerot in the morning, Hadlakat HaMenorah in the evening, and according to Chumash, over and over again, Mi'erev Ad Boker. The menorah is lit from evening to morning. Now, the mitzvah is not for the menorah the mitzvah is to light the menorah every day. And therefore, if the menorah lit straight for 8 days, like the Maccabee song, if it burned 8 days straight, they would not have fulfilled the chiyuv of lighting the menorah every day. So the classic understanding or misunderstanding that one Pach Hashem and they lit the menorah and it lasted for 8 days straight can't be. And the Gemara didn't say that. What happened? There was enough oil in the pach, in the container, for one day. Okay? Sheyam Munach had the chotam of the Kohen Gadol. V'lo haya bo. Right? In the pach. There was only enough. Pach is what's a pach in English? A jug. Yeah. There's, in that little jug, there was only enough to light the menorah for one day. Naseh bo nes. The miracle was in the pach. Not in the menorah, in the pach. Bo nes. Okay? V'dliko mimeno. They lit from that pach. For 8 days. Meaning usually, now it's the same miracle that you have, we read for the Haftarah in Parsha Vayera, with Elisha helping that lady who is destitute. Remember they took her two sons into slavery and she needed to pay her loans back. And she came crying to Elisha. Remember her husband was a Navi and probably killed by Zedo. And she needs help. And Elisha told her, what do you have at home? All I have is one little container of oil. And he said, go borrow utensils from your friends. And fill them up and sell them miraculous oil and pay back your debts. So the idea of oil, of a miracle happening, you know, in a closed jug that you can't see, it's not a new miracle. And we'll see how connected that miracle is to the time period of someone destitute, in trouble, giving up all hope. How oil is simply a great sign of hope in times of darkness. It even begins a couple of weeks ago with Yaakov Avinu, when he's down and depressed, running away for his life. Yeah, leaving home, you know, penniless, and God appears to him. He puts a little bit of oil, maybe putting oil on that matzeva and making a vow to come back one day and build a house for God. Again, oil is a time of hope in times of darkness. I think that's going to be a theme throughout Tanakh. Good. Now, so they lit from that little pot for 8 days. Now listen, the Shana Acheret, the next year, Kavum, and they made it 8 days of Halon Hodaya. So see, remember the Shana Acheret, and here the Shana Acheret, the next year with Adam HaRishon, they made it a holiday, the Shem Shemayim. So there's a lot of similarities. And remember the Machloket Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel? Do we lay 8 days going up or going down? That's exactly the last 8 days of the solstice getting darker and darker, or the 8 days after the solstice getting lighter and lighter. So the question is, are we lighting Hanukkah candles in sync with nature or to counter nature? You follow? It's the 8 days before the solstice, but are we lighting candles as the days are getting darker and darker? Are we getting more and more light? Or is our candle lighting in sync with nature? As nature is getting darker, our homes are getting darker. So, of course, we're going to follow Beit Hillel because we're looking, you know, more optimistically, not pessimistically. So that's the background, that there's something about the winter solstice, which is very basic to religion. Now I need to explain, how do we find the winter solstice on the Jewish calendar? Now, what I want to claim is that the winter solstice, people think, is the shortest day. My claim, it's not just the shortest, the longest night, it's the darkest night. My point is, if I'm looking for a winter solstice on our calendar is both lunar and solar. Now, there's no way I can have the equinox on a lunar calendar because the months are not in sync with the sun. On the other hand, our calendar is linked to the solar calendar because if 12 months pass by and in the first month after 12 months, if the spring equinox won't fall out in that month, we add a month. The rabbis did the calculation, and therefore, if we don't have Tkufat Nisan, if the equinox is not coming soon, the rabbis added a month. That's well known, and that's how the rabbis were, it was called Ibor HaShana, Ibor That was Ibor of a year, a leap year. Now, if you've been noticing, Kabbalat Shabbat, not Kabbalat Shabbat, Zman Hadlakat Neirot, ever since the end of November, hasn't changed much. For about 5-6 weeks, Shabbos comes in pretty much the same time, give or take a minute or two. Whatever time it is, it doesn't change much. Back in September, it was changing 10 minutes a week, wasn't it? Now it changes maybe 1 minute a week at most. Meaning in December, the days are short and they don't change that much. I'll show you on a thing. So therefore, the entire month of December and January pretty much, the end of November, basically the month of December in general, it's the shortest days and hence the longest nights, but not every night's the darkest. Let me give you I'm going to share my screen with you. I couldn't put this on the source sheet, it just didn't work. I'm going to share my screen from a website. Everyone can go to, I have the link to the website on our own. Let's look at sunrise. This is December. I do it in Jerusalem, it can be anywhere, okay? Anywhere in the Northern Hemisphere. Look at the length of the day, right? And how much changes day by day. See, it's December 1st. We're the day is 10 hours and 13 minutes.
You forgot. Let's look at December. Share your screen. Rabbi.
Oh, I didn't share my screen. My mistake. Sorry about that. My mistake. Okay. Share screen. And here we go. Share my screen right here. There we go. Let's go back again. Here's a December 2022, December, the sun in Jerusalem. And if I look at the length of the day, remember you have sunrise and sunset. The length of the day in December 1st is 10 hours and 14 minutes. It gets shorter and shorter by about less than a minute a day. When you get to the solstice, December 21st, see what happens? It changes 2 seconds a day. And on December 22nd, it's a half a second, less than a second. Got it? It's 2 seconds, 5 seconds, 8 seconds, 11 seconds. You follow? But as we get to the solstice, the day basically is 10 hours. The whole month, from the middle of December, the length, the daylight, look at it, from the beginning of the month, 10 hours and 12 minutes, 10 hours and 10 minutes. The shortest is 10 hours and 4 minutes. It ends at 10 hours and 6 minutes. You follow? Basically, the day is not changing. It's the shortest days of the year and the longest nights. And therefore, there's no big difference in the length of the day in December. On the other hand, I can have a very long day, a very short day, and long night, but I can also have light at night from the moon. So if I go to the moonrise and moonset, if I look at this month, for example, when I look at moonrise and moonset, that's a function of the lunar month. Got it? Now, look in the month. There's here illumination. Illumination is how bright the moon is. Remember a full moon? Remember, the moon is full on the 15th day of the Hebrew month. But here's the full moon. That was December 9th was the full moon. See that 99%, 98%? Okay. And now the moon's getting smaller and smaller this year. See that? Now, and this is already the new moon, Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh should be December 20th. See, here's the new moon. December 23rd is Rosh Chodesh. A half moon is the 16th of December, and the full moon was the 8th. Got it? That's the most illumination on the full moon. But what's even more important, when does the moon rise? In the beginning of the month, the moon rises right after sunset. But in the second half of the month, notice, this is a half moon. This is here. This is a full moon. Okay? So on a full moon, the sun rises at sunset, pretty much. And that way the full moon is out all night long. A week later, the third week of the month, the moon doesn't rise till midnight. And every day it rises later and later. And notice, right before the new moon, for Chodesh, the moon doesn't rise till 5 in the morning. Got it? And sets like, we don't see it during the day. So moonset doesn't mean anything because it's during the day. But the moon's coming, not only is it getting smaller and smaller, it's rising later and later. And if the moon rises after midnight, no one's going to see it no matter what. Therefore, if I'm looking for the 8 darkest nights in any month, what are they? The last 6 days, look right here. See the last 6 days of the month where the moon comes out. It's getting smaller and smaller. And the moon doesn't rise until 4, 5, 6, 7 in the morning. So therefore, those nights are simply totally dark. And if you look carefully, that's going to be exactly, look at our calendar of Hanukkah. We started tonight on the 18th, didn't we? Today's December 18th. Notice the moon is less than a half. It doesn't rise to 2 in the morning tonight. Tomorrow night, 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning, Rosh Chodesh. Finally, when Chanukah is over, it's the new moon. It comes out for maybe a half hour at night, and that's it, a tiny little crescent. Once Chanukah is over, on the third month, it's out every night, in the beginning of the night, getting bigger and bigger. Understand? So if I'm looking for the darkest night of the year, right? The darkest week of any month is the last week of the month. Now, or if I want to make it simple, the darkest, if I'm looking for the 8 darkest nights of any month, it's the last 6 days and the first 2 days, no matter what the month is. Now, let's stop the share for a minute and go back to just talk normal. If the spring equinox is always going to be the first month by definition, because if 12 months are over and I'm not anywhere close to the spring equinox, we add a month. So no matter what, the spring equinox is always in the first month. That's how they go there. Therefore, by definition, the winter solstice has to be 9 months later, and the winter solstice will be either in the 9th month or 10th month. It's got to be one or the other. It can't be before the 8th. It can't be in Cheshvan. It's either in Kislev or Tevet. You can do the math later on your own, you know, with the range of, you know, of possibility of where the spring equinox would begin, and 9 months later, or 270 days later, which means that the winter solstice is either going to be in the 9th month or 10th month in Kislev or Tevet. But if the darkest night of any month is the last week of the month, where's the best place to put the winter solstice on our solar lunar calendar? The last 6 days of the 9th month going into the 10th month, which is exactly Hanukkah. Therefore, our winter solstice is way better than December 21st, because in theory, December 21st, some years, could be a full moon. You know, it changes. But Hanukkah is always the darkest nights of the year. As far as the length of the night, it's always the same length, give or take a minute. Remember, I showed you on the thing. And therefore, what I want to claim is, and that I'm sure you didn't hear from anybody, because maybe someone else thought of it. But what I want to suggest is, if I'm looking for the 8 darkest nights of the year on a Jewish calendar, which is solar and lunar, the best place to put it is going to be the last 6 days of the month and the first 2 days, which is basically exactly Hanukkah. So our Hanukkah is the darkest nights of the year, no matter what. No matter when December 21st falls out. So which is a much better winter solstice. I'm looking for 8 days. And surprise, surprise, what was the original halacha? Remember the Gemara? Ner Ishu Beito. Don't be surprised. We have a beautiful Jewish custom of everyone lighting a candle on the 8 darkest nights of the year. It would make sense even if it wasn't for the story of the miracle of the menorah, the story of the Maccabees. In fact, in Bikurim, there's a famous mission in Bikurim that when you bring Bikurim, you can bring and read Mikra Bikurim. You can read that famous Arami Aved Avi, your proclamation from Shavuot till Sukkot, when you bring your first fruits. And you can bring without reading till Hanukkah. What do you mean till Hanukkah? Hanukkah is certain, it's the very end of the agricultural year. It's the very end of the olive season. Rav Yoel Ben-Nun has a beautiful article about the olive season and Hanukkah. He claimed it was originally an oil burning like celebration for the end of the oil harvest, but that's an article by Rav Yoel Ben-Nun, which is available online. Okay, that's it. Rav Ben-Nun, that's what okay. And what did Rabbi Jay say? What were you saying, Rabbi?
I just said, if I may, you said it's your chiddush. Of course, I agree. I heard one shiur in my life from Rav Yoel Ben-Nun live in 1993. And this was his topic, and I heard him say that this same idea. So
about the olive oil, that his olive oil harvest.
But on the moon thing. So if you're
the darkest night of the year, okay.
Yeah, no, both the moon and the sun.
Okay. So that would give meaning to the holiday even before, way before Hanukkah. Now I want to give meaning to it now prophetically. That was the first part I wanted to get across. Let's take a look now in the chat real fast. Okay, Mechaber Benun. Okay. So the question, why not celebrate? I'm going to the chat now. Why not do it based on the solar calendar and choose a date like Amida? Now, I'll explain El's question. Wait a second, let me go back to Ruth. Let me just go in order first. Okay, we took care of the sound. Okay. But some of the summer solstice might be related to Shivas of Atamos, but that's pretty much that time of year. But it's hard already because it's hard to find, the exact date of the shortest night, and it's the middle of the summer. But Ruth says, why did we lose the second set of 8 days? Oh, it could be we didn't lose it because the second set of 8 days takes you to Asar B'Tevet. Maybe we'll do a share on Asar B'Tevet. Maybe I'll do a share on that. Okay, in other words, 8 days when Hanukkah over, the next 8 days are going to be Asar B'Tevet. And there's something special about Asar B'Tevet. It's not just the day of the siege. It's the 10th of the 10th. There's something going on there. Okay, why not celebrate based on the solar calendar and choose a date like the prayer for rain? Okay, so I want to go back to the prayer for rain, which is an interesting phenomenon. So basically, in Jewish law, we pray for rain in Cheshvan, right? On a lunar date based on our calendar, based on what we don't want to pray for rain on the holidays because it's a holiday. And we add a week or two because people might forget something, go back to Yerushalayim. So we wait for 2 weeks till after Sukkot is over. So that's why the date is Ayin Cheshvan. When the Jews moved to Babylonia after the exile, no one could pray for rain, honestly, in Babylonia for two reasons. One is the last time it rained in Cheshvan in Babylonia, there was a terrible flood. And we didn't want that to happen again. That was in jest. But it's not by chance that the flood happens in Babylonia, because Babylonia has, sometimes when there's too much rain, the Euphrates and the Tigris overflow and they flood. And therefore, too much rain in Babylonia is not a blessing. It can be a curse. And therefore, you don't pray for rain when you don't need it. And therefore, the Minhag Gabava was to wait to pray for rain. What did they wait for? They waited 30 days before the winter solstice. So that's how December 4th, December 5th got into our calendar, based on the Julian calendar, and they don't accept the Gregorian calendar, but that's a whole history of halakha, of picking the day. What happens afterwards? Why does everywhere else on the globe go by Bavel? It got too complicated. But there's a famous thing, the Jews in Jerba did a different minhag. They followed some places followed the minhag in Israel. Some people follow what's ever needed in their own town, which also makes sense. But it's really complicated. But it was what's called a low plug. We just picked December 4th or 5th, even though there might not be anything realistic about it as far as really needing rain. But that's what we do, and that's the road of halacha, but that has a different set of parameters because you have to keep it simple. Now, let's go back to, so that was the idea of the darkest nights of the year. Now, let's go back now to our topic. Let's share my screen. And we did the phases back to our source sheet. Okay, so what did we say? We looked at the moonrise. I have the link there to the website, so you can find it easily. So it could be that lighting candles this time of year could be a symbol of hope during the darkest nights of the year. It's not the shortest day, it's the darkest night, because the 8 darkest nights of any month are the last 6 days. We went through that in the first 2 days of the next month. And if the spring equinox is the first month, then 9 months later, therefore the solstice will be the 9th or 10th month, and therefore the last 8 days of the 8th going to the 9th, 9th going to the 10th, it's exactly Hanukkah. Now, with that in mind, I want to try to explain why they picked this date for Hanukkah. Now, I'm going to jump to the Book of Maccabees, and I'll show you, actually, I want to show you something from another source on a different, a different source sheet here. How Christmas became celebrated on December 25th. This is from an old website. I have it on a different website as well, but I'll just read it from here. So Roman pagans first introduced a holiday called Saturnalia, a week long of lawlessness celebrated between December 17th and 25th. December 25th on their calendar was the winter solstice. It moved later to the 21st, but the last 8 days of the winter, of the fall going to the winter, the 8 days before the winter solstice is called Saturnalia. That's what the Gemara is talking about, and it's a well-known pagan holiday. During that period, Roman courts were closed. Roman law dictated no one could be punished for damaging property, injuring people during celebration. Lahavdil, almost like Purim, but for 8 days. Okay. So the ancient Greek writer named Lucian, he has a dialogue called Saturnalia, describes the holiday, how it was in his time. They had human sacrifice. He talks widespread intoxication, people getting drunk, singing, quarreling. You can read the rest on your own. But what's called Hefkarut in English or Hebrew, basically wild parties. In the 4th century, okay, Christianity imported Saturnalia, hoping to take the pagan masses with them. Remember, after Constantine, and the whole Roman Empire goes from pagan to Christian. So Christian leaders couldn't get rid of Saturnalia. So they converted Christianity to pagans. Probably they could continue to celebrate Saturnalia as Christians. There's different ways of presenting it, but you can look that up. Just do a search for the connection between Saturnalia and Christmas. You'll see tons and tons of sources in, you know, Wikipedia and history, and every single website possible talks about it. Now, the problem was there was nothing intrinsically Christian about Saturnalia. Therefore, to fix this, they decided that it's going to be his birthday. That's the famous Minhag. And which is really interesting. Anyone here from Massachusetts or Boston should know this. Because of its pagan origin, Christmas was banned by the Puritans, and observance was illegal in Boston between 1659 and 1681. So, and the Reverend Mather of Boston observed in 1687 that the early Christians who first observed Nativity did not think it was Christ was born that month, because heathens, he noticed it. This other guy noticed it back then. So we have a lot of Christian sources. The fact that the Puritans forbade celebrating Christmas shows you that that source is well known. Now, it can be that there's this big holiday, which is purely pagan, right? And all of a sudden, we happen to be doing something on the same time. And we've taken a time of year which is almost begging some type of celebration, some type of marking. And instead of getting drunk, we light candles. You see the difference? New Year's parties today is pretty much the same idea as Saturnalia. People get drunk. Darkest time of the year, you get drunk. Jews, we should be learning Torah, but we light candles and talk about a better future. Now, as far as we'll get to Josephus later on, but in the Book of Maccabees, which we'll do more in detail next week, when they cleanse the temple, what I want to show you is that here on the after they cleaned up, I'll just talk from 47. The guy writing Maccabees 1 is totally from, you'll see, you know, he's writing almost like pseudo-prophetic, okay? They took whole stones according to the law. They built a new altar, a new mizbeach. They made a whole new mikdash because everything was profaned by the Greeks for 3 years. They made new holy vessels. They brought a new menorah. They brought a new mizbeach toret, a new shulchan. They made a brand new mizbeach. They started bringing the korbanot. They brought the lechem apanim, etc. And on the 25th day of the month of Kislev, in year 148, which is 164 BCE, they got up in the morning. They brought, for the first time, they did Chanukat HaMizbeach. Chanukat HaMizbeach, Chanukah was originally called Chanukah because Chanukat HaMizbeach, on the new altar, because the old one was profaned. And now here's the big deal. At the same time and day, the heathen profaned it. It was dedicated on that day. Okay? Now, the day of Hanukkah was picked not only by the Jews, it was picked by the Hellenists 3 years earlier specifically to profane it. We're going to go back and see that source in a minute on our source sheet. And here, and they kept that dedication of the Mizbeach for 8 days, offering burnt sacrifices and gladness, and then Judah decided to keep those 8 days from every year from then on. Okay, we'll see this source next week much more in detail. I just want to point out one key thing, which we'll see now in Sefer Maccabim, that the idea of Chanukah being 8 days has its sources already in Chumash, because Chanukat HaMizbeach in Chumash is 8 days, isn't it? Remember the 7 days of inauguration, and Yom HaShmini is the 8th day, that's the day the Shekhinah comes back. And Chanukat HaMizbeach is on Yom HaShmini, the day of Kvod Hashem coming down is the 8th day after the 7 days of Miluim. And on that day is when they bring all the Nisim bring their korbanot, so they spread out for 12 days. But the Chanukat HaMizbeach is on the 8th day. Basically, Chanukat HaMizbeach and day 8 goes hand in hand. And don't be surprised that when they instituted Chanukah, celebrating the rededication of the Mikdash or the in Bayit Sheni, it relates to the story of the Mishkan and Chumash being 8 days, 7 plus 1, 7 days and the 8th day. That's not by chance. And even if it wasn't for the miracle of the menorah, there'd be reason have it 8 days. So let's go now to our regular source sheet and go in order now. Let's go back to not this one, but this one. Here we go. What I want to show you now is I want to get simply to the date in Haggai, and next week we'll do this more in detail, of why the day became important since the beginning of Bayit Sheni. So we have to go back to the prophetic history and the, I guess, historical background to it. We're in the book of Ezra. Okay. Okay. We did a whole series on this way back about a year ago, about from Koresh to Balfour, something like that. So this is a bit of a summary. But in a nutshell, in the Second Temple period, most of the Jews were exiled to Babylonia. There were two waves of exile in the time of Jehoiachin, 11 years before the temple was destroyed, another wave after the Tzidkiel was ran away and was executed, or his sons were executed, and the temple was destroyed, and the rest of the people were exiled to Babylonia. And Yirmiyahu the prophet told them, after 70 years, you'll come back. When exactly 7 years begin, and what you count from, that was a big argument that the people in Babel were arguing about also. But the book of Ezra begins in the first year of a new Persian king, when the Babylonian Empire falls, in the first year of Koresh, the king of Paras, just as God had predicted through Yirmiyahu that Babylonia would be in power for 70 years. The Babylonian Empire fell. God didn't promise the temple would be rebuilt after 70 years. God promised the Babylonians would be in power for 70 years. After 7 years, you have the opportunity of returning. If you return, you have to want to return, and that's up to you. So therefore, in the book of Ezra, we're told that Koresh's decision to allow the Jews to return was God was behind that. Heir Hashem et Ruach Koresh Melech Paras. Koresh did it for political reasons, but the Navi is saying that God was behind King Cyrus's decision to allow all the ethnic groups to go back to their homelands, and that was his policy of the Persian Empire that applied not only to the Jews, but to all the ethnic groups that were exiled by the Babylonians and earlier by the Assyrians. Okay, so Kovar Koresh Melech Paras, okay, this is the word of the king of Paras, all the lands, all the kingdoms God gave to me, God says, and it's my job to make sure a temple is built for me in Jerusalem, or for God in Jerusalem. Anyone in the Jewish nation in the Persian Empire now, God should be with him. He can go to Yerushalayim and Yehuda and build the house for God. That's the God in Yerushalayim. Anyone staying behind, remember, should send gifts. The problem was, and this is going to be key for Hanukkah, this was in approximately 538 BCE. Koresh was king for several years. But even though he gave them permission to go back and build, when they arrived, there's what I call the first intifada. Because there were other people living in Yerushalayim, people brought in by the Assyrians earlier. And when the Jews return, they're not coming to an empty city. They're coming to a populated town with people that have been there for decades already, brought in by the Assyrians. So their enemies, called Tzarei Yehuda Binyamin, didn't like these new Jews coming back. And they saw the Bnei Agula, these exiles, people were coming back and start building a house for their God. And they want to join them. They fight with them. Basically, they don't get along. And here's the key point. The local population were weakening the hands of the people in Yehuda and scaring them. And they had lobbyists with the Persian authorities to stop them. And there was a building freeze basically from when? From the time of Koresh all the way to the time of Daryavash. You can calculate the years. It's 18 years between the first year of Koresh and the second year of Daryavash. So there's an 18-year time period where those who returned full of energy, all excited, hey, we're going to rebuild the temple, Israel will be great again, they're down and depressed because nothing happens. I want to simply imagine, you know, you have this big movement, the new Persian king allowing the Jews to return, picking up a leaving Babylonia that was not just simply, you know, getting onto a plane. That was basically living your friends, your homes and everything, picking up and moving to Israel with these great hopes. And the people who arrived and were not able to build a temple are simply down and depressed for a very good reason. And therefore, that's it. There's ample reason for the people returning to be depressed and pessimistic. On top of that, we'll see in the book of Haggai, the economy is a disaster. No one can make a living. We'll read this all in the book of Haggai. We'll start today and we'll get to it next week. Okay. Now, 18 years later, there's a new administration in Persia called Darius the Great. Or Darius becomes later Darius the Great, but Daryavash. Now, in the second year of Daryavash, in Rosh Chodesh Elul, the first day of the sixth month, Haggai gives his opening nevuah, and his nevuah is charge is directed primarily to Zerubbabel, who's the governor of Yehuda. He's from royal descent, but he's not the king because we don't have sovereignty. We're under Persian sovereignty, but Zerubbabel is the Jewish governor. He's called Pechayuda, that's a Persian word or Babylonian word. And Yeshua, who's dedicated to be one day, hopefully, to be in charge of the temple, but the temple wasn't built yet. He's the Kohen Gadol. So those are the two leaders. Zerubbabel was a political leader, Yeshua the religious leader, and the two Nevi'im are Haggai and Zechariah. So what does Haggai tell the people? Call me Hashem Tzvot, the more. The people are saying it's not time to build the temple for good reason. They're interpreting historical events. God's telling them through these historical events, he doesn't want you. The fact there was an intifada and we couldn't build the temple. The fact that the temple didn't get off the ground is a sign that God doesn't want it. The fact that our economy is bad and no one can make a living is a sign that God doesn't want it. And he's going to say, Kol Hashem Tzvot, pay attention to your ways. Remember, pay attention to Haggai saying over and over again, pay attention. Go up the mountain and start cutting trees. Now, I want to read in Haggai. I'm going to just open up a regular talk and see Haggai inside. Where are we? Right over here. Haggai. Let's look at the beginning of Haggai. We need chapter 1, not chapter 2. Let's move this up a little bit. Chapter 1. Okay. Pasuk Gimel. Vayedivar Hashem b'yad Haggai Nabi Lemor. Hayit lechem atem l'shevet b'batechem sfunim b'abayit hazeh harev. Haggai is giving a very fiery Zionistic speech, telling the people, is this time for you to be sealed in your houses, complacent, and God's house is destroyed? And therefore, he says, pay attention to your ways. Look at your economy. Zeratem harbe, you planted a lot, and your output was none. Okay? There's no food to eat, not enough to drink, no clothing to wear, people are cold, and you can't make a living. But he's basically saying your economy is a disaster. And therefore, God's saying, pay attention. Start working on the Mikdash, God says, and I'll sanctify myself in it. And then he says, as follows, what's been happening till now? You were hoping for a good output, for a good productive year, and you only had a little bit. He says, bring it to the house and you build it, and your output and your prosperity will grow like crazy. And why are things bad? Yan manu mashem, yan beti yashu charei, v'atem ratzim ish leveto. Basically, Haggai is saying, you're misinterpreting God's message. Because the economy is bad and the land's not giving its produce properly, the people who are interpreting that is God doesn't want us here. We made a mistake by coming back. Haggai is saying you have it wrong. The reason why your economy is bad is because you're not working on the temple. The reason why it's not raining and hence there's no produce of your land is because you don't care about the temple. And therefore I called a famine, I called a drought on the land, God says, on the mountains, and on the grain, and on the grapes, and on the olive production, and everything coming out of the field. And basically, your economy is rock bottom because you don't care about the temple. And Zerubbabel hears this, and they're inspired. I want to add something. Again, I'm not sure if I'm right, but I have a hunch that the reason why we have the bracha of Bonei Yerushalayim and benching is because of this. I'll try to explain why. Remember, the first two brachot, the benching makes sense. Alaris v'amazon makes sense. And Azana Takol makes it. The first bracha, Azana Takol, for sure make part benching. And Alaris v'amazon makes sense. But what does Yerushalayim have to do with eating food? There's no obvious connection. People fetch here and there, so we always talk about Yerushalayim. But why make a blessing showing your yearning for Yerushalayim? If I follow this lead from Haggai, what's he saying? If you show God you care about rebuilding the temple and you want Yerushalayim rebuilt, God will bless the land. We see a direct connection between caring for Yerushalayim being rebuilt and the blessing of the land. So it could be that one of the reasons that we mention Yerushalayim and show a yearning for Yerushalayim in benching is because that should, based on Haggai, that should bring a blessing to the land and to our production. I'm not sure if that's right, but I've never heard of any reason, any other more solid reason other than that. So that's the that's what Haggai is saying. Zerubbabel hears this, okay, and Yeshua, and Haggai, etc. And first they're fair, that they're in awe, but they're inspired. Okay. And God has to give them assurance, I'm with you, I need a tremendous Mashem, God says. And God inspires Zerubbabel to take leadership, and he inspires Yeshua, the Tzadok. Basically, the leaders now can inspire the people. And the spirit of all the people, and they began working on the temple. They started doing the car washes, raising money, getting an architect, arguing over the plans, and things are happening in Elul. And then a week before Rosh Hashanah, there's another little gathering. We don't know what happened there. And in chapter two, it's already a month and a half later. We have the high holidays. It's already Sukkot. And the last day of Sukkot on Hashanah Rabbah, on the 21st day of the seventh month, Haggai gives another speech on the last day of Yom Tov. He says, tell Zerubbabel and Yeshua, tell them what? Who remembers? Mi b'chem anishar. Who remembers the good old days? If you, any old timers, they remember how great the first temple was. And you see the plans we're planning now. It's a joke. Saying, you guys have great hopes, but you have to realize what even what we're building now doesn't seem much, but you need reassurance. And here, remember we say nowadays, you need chizuk. You need reassurance. Listen to the chizuk they need. Vata chazak Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel needs chizuk. Yeshua needs chizuk. Chazak Yeshua ben Yesodak. But chazak kol am, the people all need chizuk. They need encouragement. God saying, why? I'm with you. Now, the people have been so depressed and so disappointed over and over again, you start giving up hope. Yeah, like when sometimes you try something and you fail often. Remember, the first temple failed. And then, you know, under Koresh we failed. We're starting again. You start giving up hope. You don't want to bother trying. You want to be disappointed again. So the Navi's giving them chizuk, giving them assurance, got to be with you. And it goes back to the covenant that I made with you coming out of Egypt. That covenant is not over. Remember, we're not dried bones, as Yechezkel said. You're always my people. Now he makes a promise. Kol Hashem Tzvaot, this is the word of God. In a short time, there's going to be a big political upheaval. And there'll be a big noise, or like a big earthquake among the nations, some big political event. All the nations are going to come and fill this house up with kavod. It means Jerusalem will become a respected city again. And God says, I'll help you with the funding. Don't worry. And the famous line that if Jerusalem will be great again, Gadol yeh kvod habayit hazachron min harishon, this next temple can be greater than the first temple. Okay. And on this place, there can be peace and harmony. It's possible. Now, that's the speech on the last day of Sukkot. Remember, Rosh Chodesh Elul, they begin inspiring the people. People making plans. And now it's time to get started on the Mikdash. Now here, I want to end the shir with my key point for today. What do I want to claim? Where are we? On source sheet. Just a quick review. In Haggai chapter 1, the new administration and new hope, talked about. Pay attention to your ways. And Zechariah, we'll see next week. We'll talk about Zechariah. About he's saying that Shechina can return, giving them hope. And Haggai saying Jerusalem can be great again, the Chizuk, etc. Now, we're going to find now, and this again we'll do in detail next week, that they break ground on the 24th of Kislev. The question is going to be, why break ground in the middle of the winter? When we'll see it's going to take 4 more years to build it. They don't finish the building until year 6. We see that in chapter 6 of Ezra. I think I have it later, farther down here. In Ezra chapter 6, it's in Aramaic, but B'Shavi Yehuda, there was the elders from the Savei Yehuda, the elders of Yehuda. We were building and were successful in building the thing with the help of Haggai the Navi, with the help of encouragement of Zechariah, and they built this temple finally with the help of God and with the based on the original decree of Koresh and the help of Dariavash. Basically, everyone gets credit. All the different Persian kings gets credit for the building project. Now, the Shetz Abayit Dina, the task was finished when? On the third day of Adar in the sixth year of Dariavash. Meaning they break ground in year 2, they don't finish till year 6, which means it's going to take a long time. And in general, I'll give you something we know from our own building projects. When you make I'll get to the chat in a minute. Okay, I've got looking at the chat. When you make a groundbreaking ceremony for a new building project, you don't make the groundbreaking ceremony when you have enough money to build the building, right? You make a groundbreaking project when you have enough money to have a groundbreaking ceremony. Understand? And then you give a speech and say, we only need a couple more $1 million and we'll finish it. You don't start breaking ground when you have all the funding, because you never have all the funding. You have to start the building project so people see there's something starting, and then people start giving money. What I'm trying to get at is that the people are clearly down and depressed. I need to do something fundamental. I need something symbolic to get the people back on their feet and working. And I think what I want to suggest is Haggai is picking the darkest time of the year. He's taking the winter solstice, specifically to start groundbreaking, because the people are down and depressed, and we're going to pick the darkest time of the year to break ground on the temple as a sign that it can't get any worse. And from here on, just like in nature now, starting from the winter solstice, days are getting longer, nights are getting shorter, and there's more and more light. The moon will be out, and the next month will be even more lighter, and then we'll have the sun out. The worst is over. So we're going to pick a time of the year to inspire the people to get the act together to start working on the temple. And therefore, the date of Hanukkah is going to be a key date from the beginning of Beit Sheni. Now, remember, Hanukkah itself is some 200 years later. But the date, we'll see, must be an important date, because let me show you one last source for today. Let's go back to our source sheet from the Book of Maccabees. Again, we'll do all this next week, and we'll do the Rashi next week as well. In the Book of Maccabees, we have the Gzerot of Antiochus, that no one can do the... I'll read from chapter 1 of the Book of Maccabees. Okay? Antiochus wrote the whole kingdom that everyone should be one people, and everyone has to leave the other religions, so everyone would be one big nation, all following Hellenistic customs. So many Israelis and many people Hellenized, okay? Sacrificed to the idols, profane Shabbat. Basically, many Jews became Hellenized, and the mistake that Antiochus made, if you tell a Jew you have to keep Shabbat, they're not going to keep it. If you tell a Jew you can't keep Shabbat, then they start rebelling. Okay? So the king sent letters to Messenger of Jerusalem and see if they that they should follow the strange laws of the land. They forbid Korbanot. They forbid the offerings in the temple, etc. They couldn't keep Shabbat. Remember, they stopped a lot of other minhagim. And they defiled the temple. They set up altars to all the different idols, all the famous things. They forbid people to do circumcision. And basically, they want to change all their laws. Okay? And if you didn't do that, everything was punishable by death. Okay. Okay, so that was every city. Now, what happened? Now, listen carefully. As the decrees of Antiochus begin, on the 15th day of the month of Kislev, in year 145, which is 167 BC, okay, they set up an altar on the Beit HaMikdash. They got the Mizbeach ready for idol worship on the 15th, but they waited. We'll see in a minute. They made all these different laws. And they waited to the 25th day of the month to bring a sacrifice on the altar. But I'm getting at the Hellenists who knew the religion. Remember, most of the war, it's not just the Jews against the Greeks. It's the Hellenists against the, that's what Rabbi Jay was talking about. It was the Chilonim against the Datim war. It was more war among Jews, between Jews who wanted to Hellenize, and they enlisted the help of the Greek officials because they were sick of all these ultra-Orthodox people making themselves look bad in the eyes of the nations. They wanted to be part of the Greek Empire because they enjoyed Hellenism. Now, but the original Hellenists who defiled the temple following Greek customs, they picked purposely the 25th day of Kislev to profane the Mizbeach, which means that day was important, altar by Sheni. If the Hellenists picked that day, not by chance, but the same day the Haggai picked to break ground on the temple, and we'll see next week the Nevuot of Haggai on that day. Everything is going to take on an extra meaning next week when we talk about the Nevuot that Haggai said on that day. It's not just they broke ground on that day. The message of that day that Haggai is giving is going to be critical to the message of Hanukkah and why later we're going to get to the story of the menorah. So they picked that day to profane it. And later, like we saw, again, we'll see this next week in detail, when Yehuda, when Yehuda is going to rededicate it, Chanukat HaMizbeach, 3 years later, on the very same day that the Hellenists profaned it, okay, on that very same day they dedicated it. That day was picked not by chance, but on purpose. And therefore, the day of Hanukkah is not by chance. It's not B'mikred, that was over on the 25th. We'll see next week also in the book of in Megillat Tanit. There was fighting already. They captured Har Bayit already a month beforehand. And they had to make all new vessels and everything. And the main event was rededicating the temple. And basically, we're turning this winter solstice holiday to a time of hope, right? And then it becomes when the battles are over, it becomes a national holiday. And next week, we'll talk about why it was a national holiday during the temple, during the second temple period, after the victory. But the big question is going to come later on. Why continue celebrating Hanukkah after the temple is destroyed? So my basic claim is, I'll just introduce it now, and then we'll continue this next week. My claim is going to be is that Hanukkah began as a you know, time of year of hope until the great Chesmoni victory, which they see themselves fulfilling the vote of Haggai, which we'll learn about next week. And it's a nationalistic holiday during the Second Temple period until the temple is destroyed. Once the temple is destroyed, there's no reason to continue celebrating it. But the people continue celebrating it no longer as a holiday of nationalism, but rather as a holiday of hope. And that's going to explain why the folks, the holiday goes from a message, not of, of nationalism, but a message of hope and lighting it. And therefore, the miracle at the menorah is going to take center stage as opposed to the military victory. And that's why in Galut, it's all about lighting candles in the Chanukiah and Banu Choshech Legaresh and hope in times of darkness and how we're different than the Goyim. Where in Israel, it became a national, it's returned to becoming a nationalistic holiday. So we'll see that next week. And we'll see next week, especially how important the miracle of the menorah is. And in light of the Nevuot of Zechariah, which I think Benny's been talking about, but we'll see how they relate to Haggai next week. So let me just check my time's up. So let me check the chat real fast. Open the chat and let's see what we didn't get to. No, not share screen. We want open chat. Open chat. Okay. Okay. Under Cromwell in England. Okay, very good. Shelley tells us in England also it wasn't celebrated under Cromwell. That's Oliver Cromwell. That was 1066, or that was, or 16, I forget when it was Cromwell. 1600s or
later. Yeah.
He's on the
back into England.
Yeah,
I believe.
16th century, I think.
Yeah.
Speaking of Gerba, most fascinating place with 12 shuls and 2,000 Arabic speaking Shomer Shabbos. Okay. If you want to go to Gerba, you're going there this year. It's amazing, the place there.
Please come out. We have a trip already. We have enough people. The trip's going. If you want to come to Gerba,
learning about Christmas. Okay. Okay. As far as God caring about the temple more than Avodah, we'll see. There's a reason why the temple was destroyed. It's an obvious question. I've asked a question about God doesn't care about the temple. He cares about people. He cares about Am Yisrael, but we need a symbol of God's, of our connection to God. There's a need for symbolism. And that's why there's a need for, if not a temple, for a shul. When the temple is misunderstood, God has to take it away. But people need some type of symbol, some type of ritual to remember how they need to behave and what their job is as Jewish people. And that's why the mitzvah of the menorah is going to be super important. We'll see next week. Okay, your clip about Nevei Yushan could apply to why we say Al Naro Bavel and Shira Malot. Ah, very good. The mismore we say before benching, Shira Malot and Al Naro Bavel, is the same theme about looking for Yerushalayim. Very good. Okay, Cromwell 1650s. Okay, remember something like that. Oh, the Samach and the Pei. A Samach is a Parsha Stuma, and a Pei is a Parsha Ptucha. That was in old text, instead of leaving spaces, they just put a Pei or a Samach where there should be a space. Like in the Korintach, in a real Sefer Torah, in a real Tanakh book, their Parshia Stuma is 9 spaces, pretty much. On one line, a Ptucha is like a carriage return. And we just start a new line afterwards. Okay, and I think our time's up. And I don't know if the game's over, but we'll find out soon.
thank you very much. Yes.
Next week, I want to explain how important the miracle of the menorah is, no matter what happened. And how it relates to something very basic in Chumash. About whenever we have in Chumash, whenever we have the Mizbeach, we have menorah. We'll see that next week as well.